Good afternoon, everybody. It's a privilege to call to order the Flood Resilience Committee for this Monday, December 5th. Appreciate everybody being here. And our second agenda item is approval of the minutes from October 3rd.
Move for approval.
Have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, the minutes are approved. Item 3, public comments. If you are here as a member of the public would like to make a comment, please come forward. 2.5 minutes. We need name and address. I don't see any members of the public there. None? All righty, we will move forward. Item number 4, presentation by South Carolina Aquarium regarding flood resilience efforts, which is what we're here about. We have Kevin Mills and Sarah McDonald from the aquarium. Thank you all very much. Kevin, good to see you again.
Likewise. Thank you for having us here this afternoon, council members. It's a pleasure to be with you today. I think our appearance today is a result of a conversation that took place.
Thank you. Between Jonathan Zucker, who's the chairman of our board of directors, and Guang Ming, and he was sharing with her this investment we've made in a technology that we wanted to give you an example or demonstration of this afternoon. So I'm going to move to PowerPoint here. And I'm going to give you a presentation that was shared publicly. I can already see Councilmember Chapman sort of shaking his head. Yeah, this is a pretty familiar picture, you know. And when you think about hurricanes in the Lowcountry, a certain four-letter word does come to mind, right? And it's Hugo. And that's an image from Hugo. And Hugo continues to be the standard bearer for all of our planning throughout the region because it was that high water mark and the most intense storm to reach our shores. But the reason we revisit it today is because we know from the devastation and destruction that took place so many years ago that there continues to be a lot at risk. And the question is raised, you know, if Hugo were to come today, what has changed since 1989? And obviously quite a bit, right? So we know in 2022 that we've got a 60% population growth regionally. So a lot more lives at stake, a lot more property at stake. We know the economy is booming, it's really mushrooming. The question becomes, can we continue to safeguard that economy and make efforts to mitigate the effects of potential storms that will attract future industry? And we also know that there's been an 8-inch rise of sea level just since 1989, of course, a foot over the last century, but it's intensifying. So this amplifies the potential risk from hurricanes and from surge events to have this volume of water out in our harbor and beyond. We're all familiar with the phrase superstorms. We know that there are more Category 5 storms than ever before. Hugo used to be a rarity. Today, it's a thing of every storm's possible definition. In 24 hours, a storm can grow from a Category 1 to a Category 5. And so the risk is just greatly pronounced. And then finally, there's this factor called compound flooding, which we're all familiar with. We think back to Hurricane Joaquin, which was really off the shores quite a few miles, but had this rain spigot that turned on over South Carolina from Mount Pleasant all the way to the upstate. 25 inches of rain, I think, in 24 hours here. Similar effects up and down the state. So you have those kinds of unprecedented events happening contiguous with a hurricane. It just creates additional risk. So the question is, with all this knowledge, how can we better forecast the future to mitigate and adapt to the risk that's with us? And that's where the aquarium has made an investment. We are co-founding members of the Center of Resilience Excellence with the Charleston County government, as well as the College of Charleston. And one of the investments we made early on is to create storm surge inundation modeling, which allows us to anticipate what happens when those broad storm effects that are extending thousands of miles out into the Atlantic Ocean and the Caribbean begin to reach our shores and then drill down from a several thousand mile event to really a block by block or even meter by meter resolution on the ground. What does a storm like that represent at that very granular representation? So we worked with Dr. Harry Wang and the team from the Virginia Institute of Marine Science to develop further some technology that they've already deployed. We received a grant from the EDA that allowed all of this to happen. And what we're going to share with you today is just a demonstration of that technology. But I'll say up front, this is nothing really new for VIMS. They've been doing this for more than a decade now. They started with the city of New York doing a postmortem, really, of Hurricane Sandy. And they've expanded throughout the Eastern Seaboard. We will be the furthest south location for them. And taking a particular look at some of the things that are unique to our topography, like the ability of green infrastructure and salt marshes to be a protective barrier and ribbon that doesn't exist in places like New York City and DC, obviously, to the extent that we have here. So what I'm going to share with you, first of all, let me just say that the benefit of this kind of modeling is that it allows us to ask the questions, what if? What if a Hugo comes back today with the additional sea level rise? What if it's preceded by the kind of compound events that we've seen? And what if we put safeguards in place, different mitigation or adaptation tools and techniques that allow us to better protect and buffer against this kind of storm surge? This is an image of really this grid work or lattice work that VIMS deploys, sort of at a high level looking over the peninsula of Charleston. You'll see all these little triangular structures. We can drill down a little bit. You see they get more pronounced the further down you go. And each of these triangles is embedded with a tremendous amount of data. It's data derived from NOAA and from LIDAR readings that allow us to know the elevation of the land, the depth of the water, the bathymetry, whether it's pervious substrate or impervious substrate, the built environment, et cetera. And each of those will tell us then the ability of that land and that location to buffer itself naturally against storm effects. So I'm going to advance now to the next slide. And what you're going to see is Peninsular Charleston. And what we're going to do is recreate Hurricane Hugo, but with today's dimensions and today's terms. And you'll see the water from both directions start to fill in over the peninsula of Charleston. And so this is a slow-moving read. You'll see pockets of blue water over Mount Pleasant, obviously. And now you're seeing it hit the peninsula. And at a certain point, it's really just King Street that remains above water and a few of the ancillary streets connected to it. Now the water's going back out. So a devastating occurrence, right? So much at stake in terms of property and life. I'm going to go to the next slide now, and you may have noticed this red ring around the peninsula. That represents the first iteration of the proposed seawall that is still being considered by the city of Charleston that would wrap around the peninsula at an average height of 12 feet above sea level. And of course, you're all familiar with all the questions associated with whether that's the right technology. But for the sake of argument, what this does is it demonstrates whether this kind of wall at a 12-foot height would work or would it not work. And you'll see very quickly that as the water begins to come in this model, it really begins to validate the U.S. Army Corps' assumptions. And you'll see the water on the east side outside of that wall. Unfortunately, in this drawing, the aquarium's in that blue patch off to the right, and we're working on changing that. But you see the water begin to well up there. But largely, the peninsula is left intact and is protected. So a barrier of some sort, whether it's just a Spartan barrier or bermed features, amenities, will have proven effect on safeguarding the peninsula of Charleston. So this was a good validation of the assumptions the Army Corps made. I will say there are other technologies out there, but none that quite have this level of sophistication and that can take in to effect the velocity of the storm, the volume of the water, and the many dynamic and moving parts, including modeling and testing these different features and protective barriers like a seawall. So what we would just propose to the town to think about as the Charleston County government and now City of Charleston are looking at as well is, if you were interested, this technology can be recodified and new data inputs can be put into place to test different assumptions. So what happens if simply there's a rain event, but not a hurricane, a rain event like Joaquin experienced? What happens if you install new drainage projects throughout the city, and what kind of relief does that provide to groundwater and flooding? What's the impact of new development? And what other kinds of mitigation efforts, including green infrastructure, might help better safeguard and improve different locations throughout the town of Mount Pleasant? We are in the process of refining this technology with VIMS. We'll be doing a 3D animation, which gives even more vivid realization of the threats that face not only Peninsula Charleston, but really the entire coastline of South Carolina. We worked with VIMS to map out all of this coastline, including upstate around the rivers, to understand the effect of compound flooding. We are working with the Charleston County government now on running models that will help support their planning. And the Charleston County is also planning to submit next year a FEMA BRIC grant application. The city of Charleston may join that initiative, and what we're just suggesting to the town today, as well as other regional stakeholders, is there might be great synergy in asking some common questions that can help illuminate the planning that affect each of our communities. So I'm going to pause there and see if there are any questions. I'm going to invite Dr. McDonald to come up with me as well. And if there's time, there's some other work we do on the resilience front as well that might tie into.
Sure, Shetland.
Yeah.
This is really good. First question is, how does this compare with what is available today for storm modeling from both NOAA and FEMA?
Right.
Which we use to show where inundation for certain height of storm surge.
Yeah, so it's a great question. And I will say, first of all, I'm certainly not a technical expert. I don't know that Dr. McDonald, while she's a PhD scientist, has the same technical expertise as the team at DEMS does. I will tell you it's a very crowded and competitive marketplace with a lot of different kinds of technologies available. I know there's a wonderful free resource that the city of Charleston is pursuing called
Woodwell,
which I think maybe the town is also going to be engaging with. So there are very serviceable models out there. We happen to think from our own exploration that this is able to go just maybe a few inches deeper and to chart different kinds of dynamic properties that maybe other single models don't.
Also, this model is on a much finer scale than most models. So this model gets as you saw, you could get it into the portions of buildings that's a 1 meter level. So it's very, very fine scale. They have to use high powered computers to run the models, and it can cover even at a fine scale a broader range than some of the other models, and it does incorporate the data from the FEMA models and from the NOAA models, but it's just a much higher resolution. It also, as Kevin mentioned, incorporates the compound flooding, so it does both. So there's some that are compound flooding, there are some that are fine scale, but they incorporated it all into one package.
Thank you.
Any other? I think we're ready to proceed. You got more?
Yeah.
No.
Can I ask one question? Just one thing. Just so that I can wrap my head around this. So what you're saying is this would be something that we could, I guess it just takes data, builds a model, and then you can modify it per whatever we're thinking about doing. So even as we're thinking about whatever, developing 12 acres that is now being used to hold water, right? Because so what would happen if we filled 5 acres?
Exactly.
It would tell us what impact that would have. That's super cool. Okay, I got it.
Yeah, and the good news, the model's already largely built in terms of its mapping, and that's true all from Myrtle Beach to Savannah. So now it's just new data inputs and you know, new solutions that could be tested out at much less cost than the initial development of this model that was funded by the EDA.
Okay, thank you. I'm with you.
Yes.
Does this new model that you all have done include the sea level rise to where it is today, and can it be upgraded as sea level rise continues?
Absolutely. So it is anticipating looking forward. If we were to run that Hugo simulation 30 years from now, I suspect it would look even worse if it's as hard as that is to imagine. So you can put in the data inputs that would calculate sea level rise 50 years from now, 100 years from now, et cetera.
Well, this looks like a much more direct and more finite than the models currently available through FEMA and through NOAA, which are used extensively for where people have to evacuate from with a certain greatest storm. Mm-hmm. And I know we use this with the State Guard and the National Guard when we are attempting to determine where to locate personnel in advance of a storm, but obviously it helps if this is more finite. Right now, the ones we use kind of general, but they're good. because it's what's available. And this looks to be more finite, so you can really go block by block as opposed to, you know, a third of the peninsula or a third of the town. And so this looks really good.
I think that's right. I think the other models are all good directionally. They can point to what the risks are. But when you get into the solution business and you want some precision around whether that investment will work or not, this is where you can test that.
So we're in the process of working to get this for Mount Pleasant?
So this would be available to Mount Pleasant. And again, we're just socializing and making this technology available and known to all the regional stakeholders, including private corporations as well that are considering different projects. We would love to work with the team here, the town staff, if there is interest in pursuing this further. And certainly consolidating efforts around grant applications with other municipalities makes a lot of sense, I think. But
The project that you might be referring to, there's a nonprofit called Woodwell, and they have flood modelers. And they provide a free service of flood modeling that the county, the city of North Charleston, the city of Charleston, and the town of Mount Pleasant are all kind of been talking to the Woodwell modelers, and they do this service for free because they receive money from foundations. The scale is not as fine scale, especially if they're going to be doing it countywide with all the different municipalities. Right. And so they can't incorporate the fine scale and the compound flooding the way the VIMS folks can, but it is free, and it is something that I've been on calls and the town of Mount Pleasant has been a part of those conversations. So I think that's moving forward. This is separate. This would be a separate, engaging VIMS and those experts who created this to create something new.
Let me ask you a question going back to your model. Is that referred to as the VIMS model or what? Is that kind of it? Okay. So I'm trying to connect dots. I mean, I get the sort of catastrophic flooding like we saw from a major hurricane or something like that. If you take that out of the picture, are there applications for more like normal rain events in the area? Okay, that answers that question. You already answered one of mine about for grant applications and things like that. The third would be, I want to pick up on where you were going, Brenda. As we make decisions in the town about development, our own property and those type things, can this get how small a parcel data level can this go to help us make good decisions or avoid disasters that will add to nuisance flooding and other type flooding, not from the big hurricane, but from the stuff we deal with more day to day?
My impression is it has that flexibility, and it also very much depends on the data that you all provide to them. So if you have your stormwater system already mapped out, they will incorporate all of that information, and they can make it as fine scale as you would need it at the parcel level, I think.
That could be interesting because we are as interested in preventing problems as we are dealing with some as we get here. And one question I got to ask, and I think I know the answer to this, if Charleston does build that wall, are the other areas going to be affected because that water is not going where it was originally going to go?
So that's a great question, Mr. Mayor. It's a question we had from the beginning. It really seems to validate the Army Corps' assessment that the impact is minimal, maybe an inch or two in either direction.
Okay.
Fear or concern was that it would deflect all of this water and create new havoc. It seems to send still the water upstream and not on land.
Right. I was assuming that, but I'm a rank layman in this stuff. And
I get it. So I have a home.
I just wanted to hear it from people that have degrees, you know, that kind of stuff.
That's right.
That's good to know. And if that type thing is done, when are they looking at doing that?
The Army seawall?
Yeah.
Well, I think the next step there is for the city council to vote to either move into the next planning phase, the PED phase, which will probably happen in February or March.
Okay.
I know the monies are built into the U.S. congressional budget, and it's considered the top priority for the Army Corps in this kind of distribution. But now the the city council has to really authorize moving forward.
Right.
And even there, you still have like a three-year window where it's still not a firm commitment to the construction, but it's further planning and engineering.
Okay. Yep. Good to know. I only ask because I think if they start on an infrastructure thing that big, what's it, a billion or is it 2 billion now? I forget.
Yeah, it was 1.2 billion roughly.
1.2 billion.
U.S. government provides a third of that.
It's going to have a financial ripple effect, taking the water issues out just in an area when you've got this much infrastructure being built.
Right.
So something for us to kind of have on our radar. Any other words for, you know, we formed this committee, council formed this committee as a result of the takeaways from the Dutch dialogues in Charleston. And that you need a standing flood resilience committee. You need to address these things. And we are trying to not only fix, you know, pipes in the ground, the old-fashioned way of doing this, which you have to do, but also looking forward to be the town of the future that has done everything we can to mitigate runoff, to what was the takeaway from Dutch dialogues? Slow, contain, and then discharge. All of those things we're trying to figure out, are we making the right decisions now that will pay off later? So any other takeaways you have for us? One would be start working with the system. And the other would be, if y'all wouldn't mind staying in touch with us as we take up things like some of our new low impact development standards, which we would love to incorporate in the town.
Yeah, that would be great.
Because we're fortunate. We all know we don't have the flooding issues that Charleston has. But that doesn't mean we don't have flooding issues and we don't need to be addressing.
Right. And we would just offer ourselves, as we have to other entities, that we're an educational resource as well. We work directly with the public on a variety of citizen science projects and just trying to illuminate and create awareness of what's at stake.
So, okay. Yeah. Sounds good. Anything else? Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
So very informative.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Come up with more cool stuff and come back. We love this. Everybody wants to be on this committee. Item number 5 is review of the FEMA-approved Charleston Regional Hazard Mitigation Plan 5-year update and program for public information. Hello, Amanda.
Hi.
How you doing?
Great, sir. How are you?
If Amanda looks well-rested, and all, hurricane season is officially over, so.
Yes.
Right.
I'm thankful for that.
Yes.
On to other exciting things. So this will only take me a couple of minutes, but the point of this is to kind of go over what we need to do for adopting the Charleston Regional Hazard Mitigation Plan. It has to be readopted every 5 years to maintain compliance with FEMA and CRS standards. We've been doing this since its original iteration in 1999 and every 5 years after that. This compliance helps us with our rating as well as makes us eligible for federal funding such as BRIC or other FEMA funding sources. So you can see here we have, it's a collaborative effort. We've got the county, 16 municipalities, 14 other agencies and organizations who come together throughout each year to try to work on addressing hazards facing us as a region. Current plan hazards analyzed are up here. Of course, pandemics has risen to an elevated concern. Once we analyze our vulnerability to hazards and kind of start to assess what impact we may have if they occur, we create correlating goals. And from there, establish activities that can help to achieve those goals. So this is generally hazard mitigation planning process, implementation process. We're at the point where we've got probably between 3 and 4, we have a plan that needs to be readopted by resolution in order for us to maintain compliance. And I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Committee? Do you need anything from us today? Do we need a vote?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
I'll move for approval.
All right. Does that suffice? We have a motion for approval. Do we have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor of the motion to approve, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, motion passes unanimously. Thank you. My agenda says item number 6 is to adjourn.
That's what mine says.
All right, well, we will adjourn. Thank you very much. Yeah.